Okay.
Ow! Do you mind if I call you KB? Because I swear I'm saying your name wrong.
Yeah, KB is Kwame.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I don't know why. I always pause. Okay, I always pause because I always think I'm saying it wrong. All right, so KB, what we're going to do is, come on, Travis, do your thing. And then, Travis, if you could just talk for about, talk to him for about 30 minutes and then give me maybe about 20, 25 minutes. Then give me a few minutes because I have a few audio clips I'm going to play, and I'm definitely going to ask him about Tulsa. All right, so okay. I'm going to go on mute. Travis, if you could just take over at this time. And introduce yourself, okay. Travis, too, please. Kwame, right. Please do the same.
Okay. Yes, well, I'm Travis Newsom. I have a YouTube channel, Yo Travis Mad Balling, and it's pretty much a takeoff for when I did sports radio here in Jacksonville, Florida. There was a Yo Travis little phenomena thing going on, so we kind of jumped on that. But, you know, my background has been sports. I did sports radio here in Jacksonville from 2000 till 2006, you know, did the afternoon drive here in Jacksonville, sports radio, whatnot. But in addition to that, over the years, of course, as the climate has changed, I've done political radio on occasion, called up, taking sides. And my beliefs kind of fall around that conservative area. But in any way, you know, people look at me as just sports radio, sports talk, and never any real credibility towards things that matter, like social events. Well, now, you come along, and I've seen you, of course, being here in Jacksonville, and you from Brunswick, when you were coming through, and, you know, you were going to be the number one pick, and Michael Jordan picking you as the number one pick overall, going to the, you know, the Wizards. And, of course, that was a buzz, and a bigger buzz here, because the commitment was made to Florida, and you did the right career move. You went to the NBA. And as you said in many videos, you put your mom on a golf course for that. That's a much bigger accomplishment than just going back to going to school and eventually doing it anyway. You know what I mean? What resonates with me with you now, all these years, you know, I haven't had to keep up with what you were doing. Because let's be frank, you know, you're a basketball player, you're an NBA. Everybody kind of, you know, number one pick overall, and people, you know, they're expecting certain things, and they didn't exactly turn out. So we looked at you as a basketball player, and then after all of that stated, we kind of wondered what happened to the basketball player, only in passing. But Stephen A. Smith, as you now know, kept your name out there pretty much for no reason. It was never anything positive, and it was always, you know, in a pejorative light, and as you said, he went on a tour, kind of like a clandestine hate tour against you for whatever reason. I don't know. And, you know, you kind of like disappeared into the ether because he became a star of your name. And then for about 20 years, people were out there just saying things about you intermittently. But it was always something pertaining to basketball, always something that seemed kind of sort of negative. It was never anything like, yo, he's doing this now. You do your shoe drives that you've talked about. I've seen some of your videos. And people jumped on that, you know, didn't jump on that. They jumped on everything basketball related. Finally, after poking the bear for 20 years, you came out because, not even because of anything else that has been said for years, but you came out against Matt Barnes. You came out against Steven Jackson. And, of course, Stephen A. Smith, Carmelo Hill. They all became people on the hit list. All of these people who poked the bear all of these years, they finally got their comeuppance. But the comeuppance wasn't what they were expecting. You came up with social awareness mixed with your basketball career because their number one weapon they used against you, you're a bust in the NBA. Hell, you took the title and made a YouTube channel. So they couldn't even use that as a weapon. And when you started speaking sense, no one, I don't believe anyone in public annals, sports or otherwise, expected you to speak the way you did. Not only the eloquence, but the common sense, the pristine common sense that you came up with. I mean, the things that you were saying, I could go through almost every video that you've done over the past few weeks, and everything is factually verifiable. There isn't any lying. And a caveat here was, for all of this, what's going on right now, all of the buzz you've created, all of these people who now know who you are, but in a completely different light, you can check almost every comment from what they knew of you then and what they know you are now. You're one of those inadvertent leaders that has come through the black community that people have always been looking for. You know, the Al Sharpton's and all these song leaders that we've had in the past, these are the people that were always on the forefront of stuff, but then now, it's in their eyes, a basketball player just steps in and he says all of the common sense things. He says everything that people all have always wanted to say but didn't have a forum or didn't have the popularity to do it. But the caveat, as I mentioned, for the buzz that came with Matt Barnes' issue, that's with the good hair, that's forget about it. That's his name until he goes to the grave.
Wait, Travis, if I may interject, can you give him a chance to respond to what you're saying so there can be some back and forth on the 30 minutes that you spend with him? Would you like to respond and then he can pick up where he left off?
Okay.
Yeah, I can respond. See, I think the people that are out here, out in public, making a lot of noise, they're doing it because they understand that a long time ago, there was a guy named, I'm going to butcher his name. I think his name is Noam Chomsky, Noam Chomsky. He said, he who controls the media controls the minds of the public. And so that's what they've been doing for the longest. So once I realized that, hey, you know, it's about a group. It's about who you like. It doesn't matter what someone is saying. The media puts it out there. People are going to run with it. And the way our mind works, we believe a lie before we believe the truth. And even if something is proven true now that's been put out in the media, people will come up with theories and conspiracy theories and things of that nature. So as I see the world now, it's very easy to control people by placing them in different groups and making it about who we like. So it was easy to beat people that's just standing there shouting in the streets when you can look up numbers. I look up things just from a number-based system. If you look up the numbers on anything that you're talking about, then you have to find a solution on how to make those numbers better. And I think the people have learned how to make money off of people's destruction. And they know people, all we need is a little hope. That's why they say these little key words that tap into people's emotions. So I learned not to be emotional. That's why, you know, for 20 years I can be quiet, knowing that there's a man going around college campuses talking about me and then saying it's not personal. And I'm thinking in my head, how is it not personal when you're saying I'm lazy, I don't work hard? And in today's society, and since I was born, perception is reality. And if you're putting out that I have this great opportunity, but the only reason that it's not working out for me is because I'm lazy and I don't work hard, and for 10, 12 years I haven't worked hard, then that means if they heard me talk like this years ago, now you discredit me, and now no one wants to hear from a busty bus, a guy that didn't work hard. That's what Stephen A. said, and we like Stephen A. So, you know, that hindered contracts, and he does it with every player, to me, every black player. The things that he says about these black males, these things hang on. Like the same thing with Becky with the good hair, that's going to take him to the grave. Well, with Allen Iverson, what's going to go with him to the grave is we talking about practice. And that story was told wrong. You know, so it's a lot of players that have to go through this. But me, I just think I was the first case, and it was very successful, and they just kept dragging them out to do it now. Sorry about being so long-winded.
Oh, no, that's good, because we definitely want to hear from you. That's the whole point of the pre-show, and I appreciate that. I'm going to check with Travis. He had some background noise, so I had to mute the mic. Travis, are we good now?
Yeah, we're good.
He's still moving around. Okay.
I'm not moving around anymore.
Thank you. The main reason is one thing that Travis said that I thought and Travis agreed was that you have a relatable way to really convey your message. Where did you get that from? And then explain the Mama's Cooking, if that has anything to do with it.
Well, to me, a mother's role is very important. And so I guess I got to – I'll explain it here too, but excuse me. To me, a little boy, especially any child, but especially young males, we have to have that – I call it Mama's Cooking, but that special bond and that connection with our mothers. If we don't have that, sometimes that shapes the way we look at women. Our mother's behavior, people got to understand, we shout people down when we try to bring up the relationship between mothers and their children, because I think everybody's afraid to piss women off. But the truth of the matter is, it's learned behavior. Children learn from who they're around. And the way you behave and the way you nurture your child is very important. So I noticed when my mom was out working a lot, once my dad was out of the picture, you know, she came back home stressed. And everything a mother does, a child feels that. So if she's stressed out working and she comes and brings that home, not to say that women can't turn it off. There's some women that can do both. But a lot of women, they can't do both. So I noticed a shift and a difference in my mother when she hurt her back and she didn't get down. She found a way to pour into her children. So she poured into me. She poured into her children the way that I feel that every mother should do, because I had friends that, you know, their mother was work. They were at work all the time. And that's the house that we would go to and get in the most trouble. So I would like to say that, you know, that nurturing mother, that mama seasoning is what helped shape a young man. And, of course, you need a male role model and a male figure or their biological father, which we don't talk about. But the most important thing is their biological father and their mother to stay together. That's that structure. But if you can't do that, because everybody argues about that, my mom didn't have as much pride as some of these women now. So she took me to mentors and took me to camp so I can be around men. And around those men, I was able to kind of hone in and tone down that, you know, that I have testosterone now. So I think I'm above, you know, because we all get to that point where my mom used to call it smelling that musk between your legs. So I don't know what everybody else used to call it, but that's what my mom called it. And it took a male for me to relate to.
Hilarious.
In order for me to, that's what my mom would call it. She'd be like, boy, don't you disrespect me. Don't you be smelling that musk between your legs. I'll knock you out cold. And so, you know, she would take me around males because at this time I'm tall as her. I'm, you know, I'm fast. I think I know everything. I'm witty. But it took a male to teach me the respect of a woman. A woman showed me women behavior and how cunning and smart you guys are mentally. But it took me a man. It took a man to come in and show me how to respect the woman. So that's why I think that balance is off. And as you can see, it's playing out in the street. So mama,
I appreciate
the love of a mother.
I appreciate that. Before Travis, I ask you to repeat what you said earlier, because you talked about his it factor, and I'd like for you to quickly recite, you know, repeat what you said. Why aren't you afraid of the audience? Why aren't you afraid of perception and the mic, Kwame? What's that about?
Because that's the control that everybody's been living under. People are not going to like you. If you talk long enough, somebody's not going to like you. And so if you spend your time worried about who's not going to like you, then you're not going to be yourself. I think that's why so many people are on these prescription drugs and these antidepressants, because they spend their entire life trying to be what their publicist told them to be and what a sponsor said they should say. And me, I just threw that out the window. It says, fuck it. I mean, forget it. You know, that's just me.
No, you're allowed to curse. It's okay. It's fine.
Well, yeah, I threw it out the window. Like, fuck it. I mean, I can't drive myself crazy trying to be who you want me to be. And the thing that I see with most of us, like our culture, our race, it kind of shifts and guides where we go as a country. If my whole family understands what I'm saying, and a lot of black families understand what I'm saying because I speak like an older grandmother or a grandfather, I'm sorry, and maybe some women in the family because, you know, my great-grandmother would read everybody, and she didn't play. So we come from a common-sense-based culture. But I think now we're starting to adopt other people's ideology and what other people are talking about. And so now they're hearing the things that they've heard when they were growing up. And I think we need to go back to that. We've cut off the elders' voice, and now all we hear is people that are getting paid to either say something or they're in fear of losing a job. And you can't have a free society if everybody's afraid to talk.
I want to just take it a little deeper. 1 second, Travis. I know I keep saying, oh, let's bring Travis in. But I wanted to go a little deeper and a little darker. Another reason I asked that is because I am very fearless when in front of the mic. I mean, and people are always asking me, aren't you afraid of the repercussions? And I'm like, what does that mean? And so, you know, because of my background, I was always taught false evidence appearing real, like that's the acronym, but they were saying something bigger than that. And it was, they had asked, are you not afraid of the big, scary white man? You know, what he's going to do? And, you know, if you get killed, will we find you hanging from a tree somewhere because you're being so real, so honest, so truthful? And it's like, you know, our history, our story, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, seems to, you know, put people off, set them off. And that's why I asked you. You don't have to address that if you don't want to, because it, you know, it may not be your mindset, what you think about.
Well, I know how to maneuver. It's not the big, scary white man that's normally doing anything to anybody right now. The big, scary white man is using his money, and he's paying people that he feels is big and scary to do their dirty work. That's why so much attention is on athletes and all these distractions, so you can't see who's really behind all these puppet strings that's being pulled. So that's why we always talking about celebrities and rappers and this and this and that, because that stuff gets our attention and we overlook what's important. So the reason why I'm not afraid is because I'm just going to stay away from the dude that they try to bring. Majority of the time, us black folks, we get harmed by other black folks. So if you notice who I've been arguing with this entire time is mostly black folks. White folks right now ain't really arguing with you. I haven't said anything that far off to piss off a white guy that's going to send a team after me. I don't think. I hope not. But if that's the case, I didn't live in fear, though. And how can you call yourself free? How can you call yourself a man? How can you call yourself a woman? How can you say you love God if you're going to let somebody control you or make you afraid to talk? You know, we all going to get hit with that Obama sword one day. So, shit, at least it's on my turn.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know how you spell female? I said there are a lot of femmales out here, very sensitive, very moist men. And it's really, 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 really sad that
they're
I noticed that in
bunch.
your session. Yeah,
they're
exactly.
The worst of the bunch because they're the ones that go out and act out the violence. These males that can't control that rage that we all have, you know, there's no difference between any man being able to shoot up in a restaurant or a club. The only difference is his level of education, his level of success, what does he have to lose. All of those factors play into a guy making those type of decisions. And if you look at the guys that's making those type of decisions, to me, it doesn't make any sense because some of them are successful. But it's just that culture. It's that mentality. And so I never bought into the culture. I never bought into the mentality. I always told guys, I'm going to be a man. I'm not going to be what you want me to be. I'm not joining a gang. I'm not joining a group. I would rather be this.
Well, exactly what he was talking about, a lot of what he said is exactly what he's been saying. The message hasn't changed because it's factual. You know, things only change and it mutates when you have to keep on making it up as you go. And what he's been saying is the same thing, staying on topic, talking about the same substantive things that he's been saying from the very beginning. I mean, it's been 3 weeks, probably a month since he's popped off like this in terms of popping up onto the scene and becoming this kind of like a martyr. And like he mentioned, numbers lie. I mean, numbers
but
don't lie.
Travis, can I ask a favor? Yes. He's here. So can you talk to him?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carly, as you said, you know, yeah, numbers don't lie. You know, men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie unless you're lying about the numbers. And everything bears true. I mean, you mentioned about how our society, black society, when speaking those terms, you know, it seems to have been going in the wrong direction. And you talked about the family structure. And I think whether married or not, we're just talking about having that nuclear family just available. You know, we're talking
right.
Today, we have 24% of black people are married, only 24%, that's less than one quarter, whereas back in the 60s, the 50s, and the 40s, and going backwards, it was over 70%. And we had less strife in the neighborhoods. We had less strife in the communities. And people had more solidarity, more pride, more dignity. We had to do things back then together because there were real laws in place that prevented us. Jim Crow laws wasn't just someone saying something. Those were laws in place that prevented you from doing whatever, and we still excelled. And so, you know, so people today, completely different. The family structure is done, and black males in particular, you know, raised by these women. And as you said, the sensitive guys based on being raised by these particular women is another reason why 34% of black males populate the prison system. These emotions they can't control, this rage that they have, it just is out of hand. And they don't know how to do it. The first thing you say, we're dying now just from someone asking, what are you looking at? You know, there isn't any real reason behind it. You know, we're talking about being in 13% of the nation's population and 53% of the violent crimes. And then we wonder why the stereotype kind of hovers over us. I mean, you know, it's the difference between the willingness to pet a poodle and the willingness to pet a pit bull that you don't know. You know, you're probably going to pet the poodle first. I mean, that's perception,
right.
As you said, it's reality. And we're projecting that reality, whether negative or not, and that's it. And it's the continued behavior. But, you know, going back just a little bit, I think, you know, what you had going back and forth with people in the media who made you finally come out and have to put them in their place, you know, that's what made the news, where in reality, I went back on your site, I went back on your YouTube channel, and there were things that were so much more substantive than what you talked about between those guys that they could have benefited from way back. I mean, from you talking about just the overall political scene where Ice Cube was called a coon, a guy that's accepted by almost all of us, was called a coon because he decided he wanted to go to Donald Trump to see what else he could do for the black community, which we've claimed for years has been neglected. He was called a coon for that.
It's mob mentality. It's that mob mentality. They've trained people. There's so many black people that don't understand that they are the go-along, get-along gang. White people are not out here.
Wait,
hold
on a second, KV. We're catching your breathing, Travis. In the mic.
Can you now?
Okay. Yes, much better. Thank you. KB, can you start the answer over? And Travis, can you ask him more questions for the next few minutes so I can get the gist of the energy? But please complete your thoughts, KB, and you're doing it again.
Okay.
Your mic is very sensitive, I can tell, Travis. But
yeah, put it on mute.
Yeah,
just
if
now.
You could. Okay, thank you. Yeah, KB, can you start over that part that you spoke about?
Yeah.
And then he's going to ask you a few questions.
Okay, yeah, I said white people are not the ones that's the most vocal and out here in the streets attacking black folks. It's other black folks that think they're right about the white folks that they like, and they'll go as far as to hurt other black people for the white folks that they like or the white folks that are paying them. So it's more than just this, oh, it's rich people are part of this go-along, get-along gang. It's people right at ground zero. As soon as you say a person's name that they don't like, somehow you don't deserve to speak anymore. Somehow they deserve to throw something at you. And once you can control people's mind like that to where they don't even want to hear the other side, then you can pretty much feed them a plate full of shit, basically.
Yeah,
and that's
what I wanted to know, you know, what I wanted to know was how did you get that train of thought? Yes, your mom, you know, your mom and seasoning and all that has brought you to where you are right now. But in the South in particular, where you have a lot of people with that attitude, black people in the South have an attitude as if they're the victim and the white person is still after them. So how did you kind of continuously steer yourself in the different direction than a lot of these people who just continue to use the same reasoning and start believing in it and not solving the problem but creating more?
Because I control my own destiny. I control my own life. I got talked to by some elder gentlemen. There was a guy taking me back and forth to work. He made me give him gas money. He didn't let me feel sorry for myself. So I learned the code of conduct from older gentlemen. I learned how to behave like a man. That's something that you have to be trained to do. And so I learned early on that everything that I control my own destiny. So then how can I turn around and cry and say it's some white man above me when a kid that came out of a homeless shelter, my family structure was off. My dad went to prison. I went to a homeless shelter. We got it together through the free lunch program and all these government assistant programs. I'm signed, sealed, and delivered to the University of Florida by my hard work by my sophomore year summer. I was qualified. Everything was ready to go. I made a decision to go to the NBA. And be the number one draft pick by 18. So, I mean, you can set your life up the way it is, the way you want it. It don't matter how you start. It's about how you finish. And I think we get so caught up into what other people is telling us. Well, I can't go off of what you're telling me when I know in reality what I did through hard work. That's why it's so hard for them to attack me, because they like, damn, how can we argue with a kid that ate government cheese and free lunch? And we gave no help to, and he turns out to be the number one draft pick. And then now he's talking again after we done kicked him up his ass for 20 years. Like, if this ain't strength, I don't know what is. And so it's a lot of black boys that's like me. That's another thing that we don't like to talk about. We assist women. We build up you guys' morale, and we give you hope and courage. We call you black girl magic. Well, there's a black boy that's sitting right across from these girls. They have brothers, and they have to sit in a household where there's no attention on them, where there's no assistance, no help, no father, no structure, period, for them to have an identity as a man. So what do you expect them to do? The only thing they think manhood is being violent. So they go pick up a gun. They're going to prove to you they're a man. And that's why a lot of these young boys are finding validation through the prison system.
Yeah, you're right about that. And, you know, let's go back, go to Steven Jackson for a minute. And this is one of the more intriguing people and characters in this whole thing that's being played out. We're like Sesame in this show right here. And how he, in one breath, has the black power fist, and in the other breath, he's still talking about threatening you and still talking about fighting. Well, probably not now because the pressure came on, but before you really lash back, that's what it was about. Let's see, let's do this. It was always about something physical. There wasn't anything about compromise. There wasn't anything about conversation, anything that's positive at all. It was just, you know, I could beat you. And it's almost unequivocal throughout black society. It's the solution is never something it's rarely something that's intellectual. It's always something, I could beat your ass and I'm going to win. If you say another word, I'm not even going to agree to disagree. I'm going to whip your ass and make sure you don't say it again.
Right, and that's what we indoctrinate the streets, and it's that hood mentality that transitions through business and rap and everything else. If you black, you can't just be a black man and be regular and make money. You have to somehow be from the hood. You have to somehow have street ties. We have to somehow brag about it when our white counterparts don't have to do that. They could just be great. We put so much on to our own community and our own culture, and we don't realize it, that white people are just sitting back laughing because we're kind of doing it to ourselves at this point. We have opportunity zones. We have all these things that if you go to your city council and you go to a score, go get score at the Chamber of Commerce to write up a business plan, go to these opportunity zones that have money in every black neighborhood. Now is the time for your reparations. It's not time to shout and yell and burn cities down. It's time to build what we need for the black community. We got all these educated people that talk about education all the time, and they have money sitting right out there for you. And nobody's going to grab it. Nobody's coming up with these business plans. Nobody's coming up with these grocery stores. We always talk about white people ain't feeding us. We can feed ourselves. There's a black man, Devin George, that I had on my show. He's doing this stuff already. Why don't you think he get any media attention for doing something like this? It's not designed for us to come up out of this. We're like in a simulation, and black folks, we are the ones that are pushing our own simulation. White folks started the simulation. They created the game. But now we're trying to peacock and prove to other people that we mastered the game instead of all of us working together. We were forced to work together back in the days. The moment that they said you don't have to work together, we proved that we think white people are above us, because the only place we do is take our money to white people. Look up the numbers of how long our money stays in our community, and that says it all. Shouting in the street ain't going to fix that. The way we look at ourselves is self-inflicted. Everybody thought I was a busty bus. Nobody cared. Now that I'm out talking, there's people that got so many opinions of me, and a lot of them are negative. And it's crazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, in the black community, some of them are saying that there's a lot of people who are backing you in the black community, too. I think it's some kind of a renaissance for them to hear someone with this type of form saying that thing. You know, they looked at you as a basketball player. That was something different. You know, you were correct about talking about the money being made and how it stays in the black community and how long. And, you know, we have an estimated 386,000 black millionaires in this country. So there's more than people dribbling basketballs, catching footballs, doing all of those things we see on television. These are financiers, these are lawyers and doctors, et cetera. And that's only 1.9% of our population, but it's still something. One out of every 50 black people are millionaires in this country. Not that a millionaire shows you're successful, but it shows that it's attainable. And so, and then you talk about these opportunity zones, and, you know, Donald Trump saved black colleges with 10 years of funding, and we still find a reason to vilify him because we were told to do so. Why do you think that mentality manifests itself?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, why do you think that mentality manifests itself? Yeah.
It doesn't manifest itself. We are so caught up. A lot of black folks, real life is so hard that the best thing they ever got was social media and the news. Because now I can pretend to be whoever I want to be on social media. I can hide the pain. It's like a drug. It's like a alcohol or it's like marijuana, where you can mask your pain by going online and twerking and pretending like you're happy, or going online and pretending like it's whatever. You know, and it's crazy that we were in a pandemic and we were still partying. And I'm like, man, this is confusing to me when they bring out these celebrities and these people got all this money. And I'm like, this is a simple fix. And they're scared to do it because they know what I'm saying is right. These people are mad at me because they know all of them are being called out, because I can name 10 black prominent people that got more money than the law allows, and that's not counting their pockets. If they opened up a black bank, or if they opened up a leasing company, and they just put $10 million in this account apiece, and then everybody that's black can donate a dollar or whatever they got so that we can start funding our own schools and paying our own teachers and getting coding and policing. These are things that you can do very simply. And it doesn't take a busty bus to know this. Everyone knows this. It's just too much money in destruction. If you're telling me I got a building in the opportunity zone right now, the only thing I'm doing is finishing up the business plan. Once the business plan is done, I qualify for that money. I have people saying they're going to help me build it at cost or for free because they just believe in the cause so much. People are tired of people not coming up with solutions. Everybody claims to love their neighborhood, but we put money phones by our ear. That same money you put by your ear can come up with a youth center or some apartment buildings in something that can make it residual income for this center to keep running. But we steady partying. We steady going to strip clubs. And our culture just tells us that everything we need to do is all about the show and no go. Because while we have guys showing guns with 30 clips and all this stuff on camera, man, I know some people that got some stuff, man. Look, Lord, you better put that down. You better put that down. You're not even going to be able to hear nothing when they come through. They got stuff with sound, stuff that'll bust your eardrum to where if you got 10 guns, you're going to be laying on the floor. So they laugh at people that pretend to be tough. If that's the route that you're going to try to go, you're going to lose that every time. We got to take the economic route. And the economic route is holding people accountable. Put your damn fist down unless it got a wallet in it. And it don't need to be going to Act Blue. We got enough black people that claim to be smart. And you don't even have to be that smart. Just take care of your community. I'm from Brunswick, Georgia. We have 5 football players that are currently in the NFL. You're making a couple $100,000. I don't know how theirs is structured, but our paycheck, we made a couple $100,000 every 2 weeks. If you have that type of residual income, you can divert $20,000 a month going into an account to say it's for the black community. If that's what you're saying you love, you ain't got to do all this shouting in the street. But we love chaos, and there's so many people getting paid off chaos. As you can see, every year we get some type of leader, and now they're trying to make me a leader. I'm not a leader. I'm just a man. I'm just a man that stayed quiet for 20 years, and I've been on both sides of the coin. I see the way white folks, and I see the way a lot of black folks that are put in position over other black folks, and they're just as bad as white folks. This is not about race, what everybody's talking about. This is about money. They can put a black person in position above you, and they'll treat you worse than any white man you ever met. Look at the way Jack talked to me. Look at the way he said, my life is dirt. My life is nothing. Ain't no white man in my life ever told me that. So I'm telling you, we got to stop looking at things from a race thing. We got to look at things from an economic standpoint. The reason why Asians, the reason why all these people can come over here and they can enjoy their time here is because they keep everything in-house. They build with each other. They don't hate on one another. I'm sure it's a lot of them don't like each other. They probably fight each other in-house. But to the actual everyday public, they're a unit. There's Chinatown. There's all these places where they keep their stuff in-house. We have to do the same. But the way we look at each other, I don't know that we can do the same. We sitting here blaming white folks for everything. Let's just say we build a black city where we got affluent black folks around other black folks. What do you think going to happen? You done trained so many people not to know how to work and make money. What do you think going to happen?
Well, that's how you end up with Baltimore. Places like Baltimore that's desperate in every sense of the way in the black community. You know, so many black people in that community, and it hasn't moved anywhere. In fact, it has gotten worse for acres and acres, if not miles and miles. You know, you mentioned about the money that is in the black community. According to the Nielsen research of 2019, black people, at 13% of the population, they are responsible for over $1 trillion of spending in 2019
right.
alone. $1 trillion just from 13%. 90% of the beauty niche, the revenue from that came from black people.
Because they understand how to keep black people. Listen, they understand that. They study us. Black folks, we'd rather look good. If we feel bad, we got to look good. So it don't matter. We could be standing on the corner with a bottle of Yak and ain't got no money in our pocket, but we're going to look like $1 million. And that's the way they've trained us. We're prideful people. So if you don't have nothing, you spend the most to look like you have it. They pick on me about my shirts and what I have all the time. I don't have money for that. I'm building a house and I got infrastructure going up in Virginia. So I ain't even going to buy no clothes. You know what I'm saying? I know my job as a man. I'm a builder. And a lot of black males.
Wait, what did they say about your shirts?
They
what did they say?
A lot of people, a lot of people was like, oh, he broke. He, look at what kind of shirt he wearing. He wearing polos. I don't know the difference because if it's my size, I put it on.
So, yep. Were you like that when you made millions of dollars? I mean, because some people, they don't really care. They just buy what they like.
So you will be able to see clips of me. I had an Adidas contract. I had a $1 million Adidas contract, and I never bought clothes. They had to force MJ implemented a rule that we had to start spending money to buy suits because all the stuff I would wear would be free. I would just tell Adidas, hey, look, send me these velour track suits was the new thing at that time. I would have every color of velour suit. I would have all the Run DMC Adidas stuff. I would wear the shell toes. All of this stuff was free merch. So I didn't spend money. So, you know, that's I knew it was something going on. That's why it never sat right with me the way I was being talked about and the way I was handled because I'm like, damn, I'm one of the smartest dudes on the team. I go to the strip club with these dudes and I see them throw $40,000. I'm like, yo, why did you give her $40,000? Like, well, you know we can go buy a house with that. Oh, nigga, you always talking about the smart stuff. Nobody want to hear that. So I learned very early on that I just need to be quiet because, you know, people have a right to have fun and do what they want to do. But, man, I'm in a locker room full of millionaires, and nobody's doing business, but everybody's expecting somebody else to do it for them. We had, let's see, the lowest person on that team at the time, I think, he's the last guy on the bench, like $1.8 million. So we got everybody up $4, $5, $3, $10, $20, $15 million. It would be nothing to all of us black people. We love our communities, right? Let's pool our money and let's come up with a business plan that has some residual income right there from the locker room. And let's go to our city council members in each city and say, hey, look, we are a hedge fund now. We got all these millionaires and we're putting in every paycheck. All of us 10 guys are putting in $10,000 a paycheck every 2 weeks. It's a lot of freaking money in a short period of time where you don't even miss it. You just can't go to the club for 1 week. And maybe some of you still can't. So that's why I said I've always been the guy that just never understood why what's going on is going on until I came to the realization is somebody wants this to go on.
I have to say something, and, you know, don't take it personal. Don't let it offend. Don't, whatever, you know, .. right? Just add a whole bunch of ellipses behind it. You're like a unicorn. I've got a couple of people. They're listening, and Judge was going to call in and say hello, but he said he wanted to save it for tomorrow because he knew that we'd never get your story. But I'm going to edit that out, just so you know. But you're like a unicorn. Like, I'm just, it's so funny because I'm like, is he for real? Like, I just, and I, Travis, you're a wonderful guy. I'm not saying that you're not. But I'm saying, like, since I have been on this end of the camera and, I don't know, even when I model, I don't remember being called a bitch this much. I don't remember being disrespected this much. I don't remember men just being so fucking sensitive. Like, you can't say hello wrong without them. Why'd you say it that way? What did I say? Did I do something? I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, literally. Yeah. And you know, just as I'm on my way to do what I'm doing, they're like, Valerie, you know, you're going to grow old. My nephew told me you're going to grow old, have a bunch of cats. Nobody's, you're going to be alone. You're never going to meet anybody because you're so hard. And I'm like, am I hard just because I'm telling the truth? Because I won't let a man call me bitch or disrespect me. And as I listen to you, I'm like, is this a show? But you're so consistent. So I wonder, I'm just like, I don't know your you know, your relationship status or whatever, but if you got a female or a girl, I bet she's like got so much competition because we don't hear men talk like you anymore. We just you talk like you got like an old soul, like this is how my dad wooed my mom and this is hell, Judge Joe Brown don't even talk, edit this part out too. He don't talk like that. They are bitches and hoes and sex this and then pee that and did it. I'm just like, Judge, are you horny all the time? You know, so it's just refreshing. to hear you talk with sense and just give women so much credit and your mama so much credit. And I don't hear what I was trying to listen between the lines, but are you like this consistently? Is this an act or what is this?
No, I give both sides credit because, like I said, if people actually listen to what I'm saying, I had a very good mother. But I also, my father wasn't the one who, just like Shaq said, feel is my father because my biological didn't bother. Sometimes you just need a man that's going to show you that that he admit. Look at Russell, what's his name, Russell Wilson? He's showing that, even though that's not
Sierra's
his biological son. Yeah, he's showing mm-hmm. that young man love, the love of a man. And that's all these kids need. So it's not just about pushing just women. It's about people understanding the importance of their role. And you got to add whatever seasoning you have to that child. It's a mama season is one of the number one things for a boy. But a father is one of the number one things for a man. I mean, for a little girl. Because a little girl is going to seek after a man like her father. If her father is a gigolo and a player, 9 times out of 10, women are attracted to gigolos and players. If her father is a stand-up man, they're going to know the difference between that type of man and a dude who's trying to play tough. So it's both males and females have a very important role, and we have to stop trying to exalt one up over another. No, they're equally important. When it's time to have a woman's role in a situation, it is the most important role at that particular time. When it's time for that father to come in and give that logic and that guidance and that authority, you have to let that father do that. And so we have to stop fighting between who's running the house. I think it's too much fighting in the black community about who's running the household. Because there could be arguments made for both sides, but at this point, at these little kids are in a situation where none of us should be happy. Men can't stand up and say, I'm the head of the house, I'm proud. Yeah, you can say that about your own house. But as a whole, these kids are losing because adults are fighting about power. We got to drop our ego, and we got to be home with these kids. The most important thing they need is time. I never gave a damn about how much money my mama had, my daddy, or nobody. All I cared about is, are you going to be there? You know, if I had something to eat, that was better than nothing. You know what I mean? So we got to stop. We putting in these sets of ideals that wasn't even us. You know, we got to get back to growing our own food, our own tomatoes, our own cucumbers, and let's get back to the basics. A lot of people are starting to take satisfaction and glorifying having cars and all these things that a flood can take that away from you. You know what I mean? Like, we got to start putting value in assets and things that are real. Like, when they cut off those grocery stores, it was people panicking. It was people literally panicking. And where I'm from,
yeah,
you know, everybody got 5-10 acres of land with corn and some vegetables growing. Like, that's just normal. But nowadays, we got apartments. We won't even put some tomatoes on the balcony. So we got to get back to
right.
the basics, you know, because that's what's most important.
I dated one athlete in my life, and the reason he admitted, he said it was because it was too much money and too many women too fast, and that's what turned him. And that's why I was asking, because I was wondering how you avoided that with all this new. I remember my pastor was in the pulpit, and he said the same thing. He said most athletes, rappers, et cetera, they don't have to go get the sin. The sin is escorted to them on a platter. And so
right.
that was kind of the energy behind that.
Well, we got to stop highlighting the athletes for doing this. My uncle got 36 kids. He's not an athlete. He's a former drug dealer.
Oh, geez.
Right. We have my great granddaddy had 28 kids. There were old school men back in the neighborhood that did the same thing, if not worse, than what athletes are doing today. And women back then understood no matter what this guy is doing, the kid is innocent in this situation. So they kept that mindset. They might couldn't stand the ground the man walked on, but in front of that kid, they allowed that relationship. He could stay right up the street, Some men live with the woman they still was cheating on, but that's a personal choice. Now we're making a public choice of what we do in our relationships. And if you look, dig back to your grandmother, dig back to your great-grandmother did stuff, your great-granddaddy did stuff, but the kids, if a male have a child, you cannot block him off from that child. Women back in the day didn't do it as much as what's going on now. And I think, to me, in my opinion, that's connected to the deterioration of the neighborhood to where we dropped the neighbor and now it's called hood.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, and if you do this, please make sure that I'm a part of it, but I think you should at least consider before the summer, a relationship show, just, you know, to hear from men and women, because I think that you got a lot to offer people, and we definitely need that, because too many futures out here, Future the Rapper, just running through women, and then too many women are just kind of passing out coochie coupons, so I mean, hey, what do you expect? You know what I mean? If we're playing it on both sides. Let's see. So real quick, this is something that was on your YouTube, and I don't know if it'll play as well listening as it does watching, but here we go.
What you gonna do, nigga? The man right here. Mama cooking right here.
Oh, you dead wrong. But I'm coming.
I couldn't quite make out what you said there towards the end, but I see how you prep for your show. So how do you pick your titles? How do you know what you're going to do, and what should we expect on these last few minutes? I mean, what should we expect on your YouTube platform?
Man, I just go off of feel. I've been having so much fun, and I encourage everybody to do what's fun. Like, I just been having fun. Somebody recorded me dancing, and I can feel it. That's me normally all the time. Like, I just... My life was so hard growing up that I don't understand why people become successful and make money and all they do is take time to flaunt it and be tough and be mad at people. When you grew up like I did, you've been around so much violence and poverty and then you make it, man, the last thing you're trying to do is argue with somebody. The last thing you're trying to do is get into an altercation with somebody. I mean, of course, I learned how to do it because the environment that you're in, you have to learn. And, you know, but you pick your battles. And a lot of times people now, we're not picking our battles. The internet and then social media is picking it for us. So we can't look like no punks. So we're saying the most outlandish, crazy things to people over the internet on a daily basis just because we want confirmation or we want other people to think we're somebody that we're really not.
What do you want our listening audience to take away from today's pre-show? Give me some fun, some energy, some dark secrets.
I don't really have no dark secrets. I just want people to wake up to the fact that our voices are being silenced, and it's okay for people to say something you don't agree with. Like, we claim to be the most educated society, but we're the most sensitive at the same time. And it's the worst combination to have educated, sensitive people, because now they're smart enough to hurt you. So we got to cut back the emotions and get people back to understanding what true education is, which is understanding. We got to start understanding people's perspective on things, because a lot of the killings and a lot of the things that's going on is just because we've taught people that we don't do no talking. You go to every neighborhood, the first thing they say, man, I don't talk too much. And that's what's, you know, the natural next thing after no conversation is violence. So we got to start having conversations, and we got to start making sure we watch what we say to people.
Thank you. Travis, do you have anything you want to say? Because you got to go, what, here in – are you late?
No, I'm texting him now. So he's ready to go right now. So I'll be in there in 2 minutes.
Okay. All right. Travis, any final words?
No, just keep doing what you're doing. I mean, you've opened the eyes. You've awakened the giant of people with consciousness. And these people are willing to not necessarily follow you, but that's what they're doing. But you know what? If that's what's going to take moving ahead and getting this thing going forward, you know, I'm all for it because we've done a lot of rhetoric over the years because it sounded good, but we've done absolutely nothing because we wake up every morning looking for the newest problem and never trying to find a solution. And if you continue to look for problems, you always find the problem, but then you keep on standing as if you're looking for solutions.
Mm-hmm. And the problem is they got these pretty degrees that they don't know what to do with. So now the lane is find a problem and articulate it in a way that you can get paid for it. You're not going to really do anything, but you're going to get paid for talking about what could be done instead of just doing what's right in front of you. Go get business plans, go down the scores. You can't write a business plan. That became a commerce that'll do it for you for free.
Wait, we're losing you. You sound motorized. We're losing your audio.
Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, I think you have to repeat that. Yeah, if you could please repeat that.
Yeah, I said people want to get paid for telling you the problem and telling you a plan but not execute one. When all you have to do is go to your city council, which we are doing, and hopefully the team is ready on Saturday because we're not doing I have a team of people in North Carolina. I told them I was going to help them. They told me they were going to help me, and we're going to one hand wash the other. They're going to come on my platform. They're going to lay out everything they're doing. They're doing great things. I'm not doing it for money. I believe in what she's doing, and once people see what she's doing, I'm pretty sure they're going to believe in it too. And so that's what I'm going to use my platform for, the people who are actually in the communities, not destroying the communities, but they're doing things that the government can learn from and people can learn from. We have these, like I said, we have these opportunity zones. There's the Chamber of Commerce. If you don't know how to write a business plan, they will write the business plan for you. It's called SCORE. And you go down there, you take the business plan, you find the opportunity zone. Once you have the business plan that shows that this business can make residual income so that if the government don't put no money in it that year, that those are the people that's going to get the money and to go ahead to do the project. So all the leaders, I implore them to let's start talking about that because in every city there's an opportunity zone. In every city there's vacant buildings. And those are the buildings that you – that's whatever plan you can come up with, those are the buildings that you use. So let's take that fist and put it down and sit down at the table and come up with business plans and let's hold the government accountable for what they said. They talked about all this money for Black Lives Matter. They gave all this money. People was taking all this money and transferred it and dispersed it out to other people. It's time to hold them accountable with business plans.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you so much. I don't know how to say that, and I can't say it enough because I really didn't want to like you, and I'm going to tell you why just real quick, because I gave Maurice your contact information. I said, get him for the show. He's going to be great. He's going to be great. And then Maurice comes back, and he goes, Judge is going to be on his show. I said, I'm going to pop you in your face. And I was so proud of you guys on air because I said, I promise you, they're going to get a million views because the chemistry was there. It was like a beautiful love song. And I actually like you, and I appreciate you so much because, it was just business for like 2 seconds when I was like, oh, I hate him because he's going on there first. But, man, you really changed my mind. Now
yeah,
I got to go back, you know, and really revisit.
Yeah, I talked to Judge Joe Brown, and I told him, I said, look, man, I appreciate the things that he said. I knew it was going to be controversial.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be big. And so I told him then, I was like, look, I'm going to come on yours, you know, right away. I ended up falling asleep. I was going to call into you guys' show, but I was tired. So I told him I would come on his show. And anytime you guys need me, you know, we can bounce back and forth. And because it's about bringing people together and sharing information. It's not about being the big YouTuber and all that other stuff. My thing is, if we always talk about what white people won't do for us, if somebody that's black have a big platform, why not go around and bring everybody up with you? And then we all can have something that we're making money off of it. So now when we come to each other and say, hey, you know, we can do this, we can do that, everybody is making money. At least this is one way to make money, but you can, whatever you're doing on your own, you got to still do it on your own. But life ain't handed to you. And a lot of people want things handed to them.
Yep.
Thank you. We'll definitely add our name to the list. My name, Judge, Travis, etc. Please, we're here for you whenever you need us. Call, and let's definitely brainstorm and do some things in the very near future. I definitely know the one project we spoke of that I definitely want to get with you and execute that because the world needs to hear that. But you want to shout out your social media and anything else, any final adieus?
No, my Instagram is Quan Low, that's KWAN_LOW. My YouTube channel is Kwame Brown's Bus Life. And then I have a website, buslife.com. So you can check me out on all those things, and that's about it.
I hope you're enjoying this big exclusive via the Judge Joe Brown Show. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Now, back to the show.
The show is sponsored by the Hurricane Reports, merchandise, and more.